Could you please explain about the death process? What happens to us as we die, or as the body dies? How quickly does rebirth occur? Is there anything in those last moments of that life that affects how one is reborn? Our thoughts, our environment, or how are we being cared for, mature emotions, not so mature emotions, etc. Well, I think one of the things in terms of the death process that is really good to take into account is that when we think about the death process, we oftentimes, when we conceive of it in our minds, then it's sort of, you know, there I am in my bed at home, surrounded by my family and my loved ones, and then I mindfully pay attention to the death process. In reality, what happens is either one is sort of like one driving down the road at night and all of a sudden there's this headlights coming straight at you and it's sort of, oh shit. That's the death process. Or, where it's completely out of our control, and we're sort of carted off to hospital for some reason or other, and they fill you full of tubes, wondering, this isn't how I wanted it. So that, I think that's important to sort of put that into, because we idealize the how we think we're going to die. Death can come quickly or slowly. It can come on our terms, and come not on our terms at all. And more often than not, that's what happens. So that the preparation for death is really these reflections, investigations on a real day-to-day basis. And that's certainly what the Buddha... there's one of the chants in the chanting book that is called Abhinna Pachavekana. These are things to be reflected on again and again, sort of and the Buddha said, on a daily basis we should be reflecting on. I am of the nature to age, I have not gone beyond aging. I am of the nature to sicken, I have not gone beyond sickness. I am of the nature to die, I have not gone beyond dying. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. I am the owner of my karma, heir to my karma, born of my karma, related to my karma, abide supported by my karma. Whatever karma I shall do, for good or for ill, of that I will be the heir. And those reflections on aging, sickness, death, impermanent separation, and being the owner of our karma, that is preparation for the death process, and it's exceedingly important to be allowing oneself to challenge one's perceptions of the illusion of a control, or the uh, how long we're actually going to live. If we've been practicing for a bit, we usually get it that we have to die at some point in time, but it's usually off into the future. So that the reflections on death and the there's so many different ways of dying that we say what happens to us when as we die. As we die, then there's a breakdown of the physical body, of the processes that sustain life, and a breakdown of the on a certain level, the mind itself, not in the sense of we all fall apart and go bonkers, but I mean there's the what we conceive of as my mind and my thought. That's that we prop that up through our whole life and identified with the thoughts, the memories, the perceptions, and that starts to unravel. And if what you've done is spent your life identifying with thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, then it's going to be confusing because it's just natural that unravels. That's why there's the reflection in the morning chanting. Body is impermanent, feelings are impermanent, perceptions are impermanent, mental formations are impermanent, consciousness is impermanent, body is not self, feelings are not self, perceptions are not self, mental formations are not self, consciousness is not self. These are extraordinarily important reflections to investigate and to take on board, so that one is not identifying and building one's home in these impermanent non-self phenomena, which is the habit of human beings. And the rebirth generally takes place fairly quickly, in the sense that the mind identifies. There's a doctrinal position of the Theravadins that it's a sort of instantaneous rebirth. And I say a doctrinal position, historically generated by after the Buddha passed away, and then there was various schools of Buddhism grew up. Then the Theravadins were one of them, and they had particular positions that they took, and one of them was this instantaneous rebirth. Which of course there is some scriptural basis for that, but there's also, I think, one of the wonderful things of the Theravadin scriptures is that they kept everything. That was the name, the Way of the Elders, and sort of okay, they tried to keep everything. They were the conservative element, so that within the scriptures, then you also have things that contradict that. The antarabhava, which is the in between becoming, which is a state of which the Buddha talked about, and And there's also a discourse where the Buddha talked about, compared it to like a fire being blown by the wind. So that the rebirth, so as strong as the wind is picking up that flame or that fire and pushing it somewhere else, it could be longer or shorter or further away. And then and compared that to, let's say, the desire, that to the degree of tanha and identification that impels the mind to rebirth. So that the in general, you know, there's a, I don't think it's as neat and tidy it's not as neat and tidy as the Theravadin's Buddhadho, instantaneous rebirth, or as neat and tidy as the Tibetan's Buddhadho, where 49 days, and it's like this. I don't think anything's neat and tidy. So that, but there are these processes that it's generated by, so that rebirth is generated by the identification, attachment, state of mind, and the degree of clarity and calmness within the mind, and that's why within Thai culture or Thai tradition, there's emphasis on people attending to a person who is dying and supporting them, making sure they're comfortable, feeling a sense of ease physically and emotionally and spiritually, so that there'd be trying to remind them of, say, like using chanting, speaking to the person, meditating around them, spreading loving kindness to them around the sick bed, so that those are very supportive ways of creating a wholesome mental state, because that. It does have an effect when the mind is in a wholesome state and is clear. It's also a time, those transitions are also times of opportunity as well. So very deep letting go, seeing sort of, right, I've heard this, right, I'm of the nature to die. I'm not going to be. Really, yeah, I've heard this before, and it's just, and so getting it, and then being able to really turn to relinquishment from a place of calm. It's possible. That's why it's that support is there and encouraged, and say, culturally. And it's also why that, say, after somebody, say, when we think of, rebirth instantaneous, it's also why there tends to be, in all cultures, really, a washing of the body, a ceremonies, ritual. So that it both for the people who are alive, but it's also for the person who's died, so that they can make that transition in a way that is with peace and relinquishment. So those are important aspects. And then there's also, of course, you know, in the sense of sometimes somebody has built up so much habit or unskillfulness that, you know, they can't really think of. There's a one of the monks or former monks of Ajahn Chah's was asking him, you know, about working with say death and dying, working with people and giving them an opportunity for a wholesome rebirth, and Ajahn Chah sort of had his cane beside him and pulled it out and poked him in the chest and knocked him over and pushed him on the ground and said, "Bhutto, Bhutto, Bhutto, be peaceful." says, you know, if somebody hasn't done the work, it's not that easy. So he said, that sense of the importance of preparation as we through our life, it's really that's His Holiness the Dalai Lama was one time asked, you know, what was his practice, and what was his sort of the basis of his spiritual practice, and he says, "I practice dying."